Filmcore.
Hello, welcome to the special Christmas edition of Filmcore this year. I'm Alex Kirschenbaum, joined by Greg Brecker, Chris Wickman in person this time. Hello, gentlemen.
What's up, man?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. So today we are doing a special list core that is tied into the holiday where we count down our top five Christmas movies. The main criterion actually is that it has to be, the movie in question has to take place around Christmas time for the majority of the movie. It doesn't have to be about Christmas, it just has to be Christmas-y in its backdrop.
So like, for example, Eyes Wide Shut would totally work as a Christmas movie. For the purposes of this podcast.
Indeed it would. That movie takes place entirely around, I think, the 2 weeks before Christmas and then Christmas Eve.
Not everyone's Christmas revolves around a masked sex party, but
yeah,
that movie does take place around Christmas.
Sure does. That movie is weird because it's about one of the best looking people in the world, like, being unable to get laid by anybody.
That's a good point. I never thought about that.
It's just a joke, basically. It's a big joke.
At some point, we can talk about, apparently, like, Kubrick thought that something was weird about their relationship, Cruises and Kidman, and
Oh, really?
Was very much trying to get at the heart of it.
Really?
Yeah, during the filming, and it was,
wow,
like, kind of playing them against each other and trying to do a lot of different things.
I did not know that.
And it's unclear if it was, like, a direct thing against Scientology or, you know, sort of what he thought that was. And whether that was what was affecting the relationship. But fun little fact.
Wow. So that's why it took 18 months. He was just like, I'm going to crack
them.
I'm going to break
them. He's like fucking with them all day. So how are we doing this?
So we are counting down the top five. We're going to go around, get everybody's number five, then go around, get everybody's number four, et cetera, et cetera. So we will start with the man with the drink. Christopher Scott Wickman, go ahead.
That's embarrassing. We're all drinking. Listen, I'm just getting in the holiday mood, guys.
Hey, no, we're all drinking here.
It's a few days till Christmas. So my number five is technically not a movie, not a feature-length movie, but the Charlie Brown Christmas TV special has to be, I feel like, in this conversation. Definitely made my top five. Love the soundtrack. That's a huge part of it. Story's nice too. It's kind of one of the earlier iterations of like a modern take on Christmas. Has some themes of like materialism, that kind of thing. But just it's always on TV this time of year, and that means it's a huge part of the holiday tradition for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't leave it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cool. So yeah, the one caveat is that it's not feature length. It's 22 minutes long, I believe. But we can allow that because it's a special Christmas movie.
Yeah, it really is. Special. It's near and dear to me.
Near and dear. And if we didn't count that as a movie, what would you have as your number five?
I'd throw in another TV special. I don't even know what it's called, but the Rudolph animatronic movie.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Mm-hmm. Another staple of network programming this time of year. And, you know, growing up, it's always something you watched. Now it's part of the canon.
Mm.
You watch it with your family, or at least we sometimes do.
Those of us who have the kind of families that we can sit around with.
Well, I might be drinking with... I might be drinking with them too. But yeah, it's another one that, you know, I probably haven't even seen in the last couple of years, but it's just, you can't leave it out of this kind of a discussion.
It's a pretty great movie.
It's one of the Rankin Bass, as we were talking about, right?
Rankin Bass, stop motion, 1964. Burl Ives, I think, is the name.
Burl
Ives. Yeah,
he sings the snowman. Song, definitely.
Yeah.
Snowman. He's a magical snowman that's like the chorus. Yeah, it's a good movie.
Which is confusing because isn't the villain is the abominable snowman?
Yeah, but he's like a big Yeti.
Animal. He's like a Yeti.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's
blue.
Confusing if you think about it. Like, so what's the definition of a snowman in the world?
But he ends up being good, right? That's the story of all these, right?
Like, yeah, he gets cracked in the head or something, right? And then he decides, like, Well, I don't need to be mean to these people.
Yeah.
So he's like hemorrhaging or whatever, and he's just like not taking the stretch.
So literally the opposite of what happens in the NFL every Sunday.
His concussion leads to him.
Which is not funny. I shouldn't be joking about that, but I just did.
Well, that's okay.
That's another podcast, concussion.
Oh, yeah. I would totally do a concussion podcast, you guys. Yeah. We should totally do that. Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Will Smith is concussion.
Is it coming out there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we should do that.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'll have some thoughts on that movie.
Yeah.
Likewise. Luke Wilson plays Roger Goodell.
It's like, it seems like it needs to happen, but is this the best way to do it?
Yeah. Oof. Also, why is it called Concussion? What a horrible title.
Well, he already got the Golden Globe nomination, right? For it.
Yeah, but, you know, people just get Golden Globe nominations because of either the prestige topic or, like, who they are. Meryl Streep just gets a nomination no matter what she's in. It could be really bad. It could be Mamma Mia. She'll get a nomination.
All right. I'm going to do Alex's job and move things along to Greg.
Okay, yeah.
Greg,
so
for his number five.
I'm going a little bit different, a little darker. Number five is Scrooged, which is the Bill Murray take on A Christmas Carol. And it's basically, I thought it was actually 90s, but I guess it's 1988. Richard Donner directed. And it's about, it's kind of, I mean, I guess it would still work today, but it's definitely playing against the rise of wealth in the 80s. So he's like this TV tycoon who's a real asshole. And he learns, you know, he goes through the whole Scrooge story. Mm. But it's one of the funniest Bill Murray movies I've ever seen. And it's almost like it's almost like he didn't realize that he signed up for a Christmas movie. And he's just getting like slammed with it, you know, and just like running into things for it. There's like a hilarious Bobcat Goldthwait role. He plays one of his underlings. Karen Allen's in it. Like, just the cast in general is really awesome. I guess a lot of people didn't like it at the time because it's really dark and kind of creepy.
Yeah.
But anytime it's on, like, I'm in. I think
so how
so
many
funny.
How many times have you seen this movie?
I mean, I'll see it like four times a year, right? Like every time
really?
It's on. Yeah.
I for
it's
whatever
on USA now and
for
like,
some reason I've missed it until it was on like my parents' HBO when I was staying at my parents' house for Christmas a year or two ago.
Oh, wow.
I literally had never seen it. My dad's a huge Bill Murray fan. Like, he made us watch Caddyshack as soon as we could speak English. So I'm surprised I missed out on this movie until I was well into adulthood.
It's a weird one. It's definitely a weird one. I think it might actually be also it's the last movie I can remember of Bill Murray where he looks like young Bill Murray with like the curly black hair, you know? And then I don't know what he did afterwards. Maybe like What About Bob or something like that.
Yeah,
like
Ghostbusters 2 was the next year, and then What About Bob is 91, and then you get Groundhog Day 93. There's a couple other movies in between there that I'm forgetting.
Ghostbusters 2 is still young Bill Murray a little bit, right?
Yeah, well, he was born
but
in 51.
But Groundhog Day is probably the transition where he starts becoming Lost in Translation Bill Murray.
Yeah, his hairline's going back a little bit, it's thinning out. He's, I guess he's 41-ish probably when they shot that, so yeah, that makes sense. When they shot
Groundhog
Day.
Have you seen Scrooge?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
You told me to watch it, and I watched
it.
Yeah, it's dark. I didn't love it as much as you did, but I think having a sentimental attachment to it helps. Like, I should have seen it earlier in life.
Mm-hmm.
But I did like it, of course. It was a good movie. I don't know. I wanted it to be darker, I guess.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I think
that's what everyone's looking for.
I actually think,
Christmas
yeah,
time.
No, I think it's...
Me? That's what I'm looking for.
It's like my Nightmare Before Christmas, kind of. You know, a lot of people like that movie, specifically because of that. I didn't. I didn't like it as a kid.
I didn't fall in love with that as a kid, and that's why I didn't.
I don't like Danny Elfman, really.
Yeah, so I'm glad it came up in case no one else put it in their list.
Yeah.
But that is a great movie that is about Christmas. I don't know, it doesn't. I kind of was trying to approach this list with a sort of spirit. And the movie's technically amazing, well written, everything about it's great, but. Just didn't put it on my list.
I love that movie, actually. As a kid, I saw it three times in theaters. Like, it made me want to make movies. I bought like the book that I was making up. Actually, I bought two making up books on it. I had it on. I had like two copies of it on DVD because there was like a special edition that came out, so I saw that. And I hated when it was compromised by Good Charlotte because everyone had like the Good Charlotte Night Before Christmas hoodies. That kind of tapered my enjoyment for me, you know, in high school. So, and I was like, man, like, how could this great movie be co-opted this way with these shitty pop punk mall bands? But
wait, so what is your number five then?
Oh right, yeah, we have to get to me now. I will probably have to say Home Alone, 1990. You know,
it's pretty low, man. It's pretty low for Home Alone.
I was gonna say
it is low.
We might be talking about this movie again later.
You know, it is pretty low. Why is it so low? I mean, objectively speaking, you know, even within the context of the movie, why would the parents leave him at home?
Oh, right? No. Objectively, it's dumb to really dumb.
Yeah.
But it plays it so again, seriously. I was
approaching this list as a completely subjective thing. So,
yeah, as you should. As
we'll
you
be
should.
Talking about this podcast, let's say, or sorry, about this movie again towards the end of the podcast.
Yeah. Okay, good. I mean, it's a great movie. I think it really is a great movie. Like, it is very dumb, but for what it is, it's just
I just remember thinking like, oh my God, there's families that are that broken out there. You know, like that's all. I don't know. I always thought it was kind of possible.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It's just like
way, I thought you were talking about the old man was named Murph, the neighbor.
No.
You're like, talking about Kevin's family.
Kevin's family. The McAllisters are just nuts. Right?
Yeah.
I saw like, oh,
they
that's,
are
that's
nuts.
Like,
well, they are.
There's like some rich like you know asshole people.
North Shore, like crazy
really,
North Shore people, which we all know about.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it was produced and released kind of. Well, no, it was early 90s, so it wasn't at, like, the peak of that kind of... it was actually on the heels of a recent recession, so... Right? Isn't it 91 or
1990,
something?
So the recession was October 87.
Yeah. No, so that's... I think that's recent enough that, like, people were just getting back into the...
Mm-hmm. Consumer spirit.
Right, because it peaked again in 99. But anyway, yeah, I just saw that over Thanksgiving, and it's very much... The parents are sitting in first class... On their flight to Paris, which is their like, that's their like blasé thing
doing
for Christmas.
Yeah.
They're so bad at life too.
Yeah.
I mean, just with planning a vacation,
and they don't care. Yeah, so it's very much about that whole zeitgeist, but still gets me every time.
Oh, it's so good! Yeah. Like the scene at the end when the old man next door reunites with his family. It's pretty touching.
Yeah,
touching. John Candy, the polka band,
Polka King of.
Is it the Polka King
like
of Midwest
or something like? Yeah.
Then he keeps trying to reference all the polka songs.
Polka.
Yeah. And like, you know, Catherine O'Hara is just like, I'm not familiar with those.
How is that just your number five? Okay, all right.
I don't know. It's such a cartoon. I guess I'm being objective in my subjectivity a little bit too much, but. That's where I slotted it for this list that could change.
Okay.
I'm just going to note those produced by John Hughes.
Written and produced. He wrote
written
it in...
And produced.
He wrote it 8 hours overnight, apparently.
Because that, I think... What did I net out? Nope. Oh, so I will bring it up now. I really wanted to put National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation on here.
Mm.
Also produced by John Hughes.
Mm.
I saw it recently, and it was really like the slapstick stuff with Chevy Chase in the attic. I was like, "This is terrible."
It's not quite as funny as Home Alone.
Wait, that's your number four?
No. Oh, okay. I was just saying I'm bringing it up because John Hughes produced Home Alone, and I feel like National Lampoon is canonical, even if it's not in my top five.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to honorable mention National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and then I'll move on. But that's a really good movie. I read a whole Rolling Stone...
the oral history.
Oral history that was really great. And didn't realize until... It was before I read the oral history, but like a couple weeks ago, Johnny Galecki, who's on a TV show I won't mention because it's terrible, I can't stand it, but it's a very rich man because of that TV show. He's the kid in... He's on...
The Big Bang Theory. I know what you're talking about.
So he's the son in... Rusty.
Oh, he's Rusty?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, my number four is Trading Places.
Oh. That was an also-ran for me. That's a good one.
I can understand why it's an also-ran. It's not... people probably don't think of it first and foremost as a Christmas movie, but it totally fits in the Die Hard, Eyes Wide Shut category.
Yeah, totally.
Where it definitely takes place over Christmas, and it's such a great movie. I think I also read an oral history on this, but it was many years ago, so I don't remember everything about it, but... I love that movie. That also fits in the Scott Wickman, that's my father, education category. It was much like Caddyshack, where he sat Andrew and I down and said, "Boys, you need to watch this movie." And that's it's movies like this movie where I get everything about my sense of humor. I think it was, so is that for Eddie Murphy, that's either his breakout or I think he had just finished shooting, was it 34 Hours or 48 hours. But that hadn't been released when he was shooting Trading Places, so I don't think they knew what a giant, like, big deal he was going to be.
Mm.
And then this movie blew up. But regardless, it's so much fun. It's hot Jamie Lee Curtis, which there's two different Jamie Lee Curtises.
Yeah, yeah. I distinctly remember, like, that was the first movie that wasn't a bad movie where I saw tits. You know? Like, and I was like, "Oh, what?" You know, and I think I watched it maybe with my parents.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is cool. Are we all cool with this? Are we cool with this? And the scene where she's just like standing there topless with Dan Aykroyd is super nonchalant.
Totally gratuitous scene, too.
Yeah. And I was just like, okay, all right. All right, this is what it is. You know, this is where we go from now on.
We're now joined by Charles Perry. I'm going to offer him a drink.
Hey.
Charles.
Thanks, Christopher Wickman.
Beer? Whiskey?
Whiskey.
What's up, Mike?
What's going on,
welcome.
Dude? Thank
welcome,
you.
Man.
I'm gonna pour that while Alex retreads what he was just talking about.
Right. Jamie Lee Curtis, topless scene. Feels...
Oh, maybe we don't, yeah. that's...
No, let's get back into it. So anyway... So Jamie Curtis's topless scene in that movie felt superfluous to the point where you feel like she got paid $50,000 just to take off her top, in addition to whatever her salary was for that movie. And because it's just her standing there without a shirt for a minute.
Is it true that Halle Berry was not paid extra for that scene in Swordfish? Just for her own personal pleasure?
No, she was paid extra.
Okay. I heard the wrong rumor.
She just wanted to, like, show him off to John Travolta just for kicks to see if he was interested, sure he was gay.
She's a woman of a certain age, and you get to be more proud of that as you get older, I think.
Yeah, she's 49 and still cooking.
Is that?
Halle Berry.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, okay, Trading Places.
That's a disagreement.
I think we it's awesome.
Yes.
Covered it.
Yes. John Landis. Great John Landis movie. Greg,
also,
your number four?
I mean, mine, I think I was probably slating it at number three, but I'm okay with just going with number four, Trading Places.
Oh, you're putting it at number three? Awesome.
I was going to, but I think I'm going to just, like, whatever, we'll just put it at four right
all
now,
right.
Too, and then we'll... You know, because my four and my
three
can
lot,
sort of...
Greg, you know, he's...
yeah, we can sort of swip him, you know, like,
swap
him back
please.
And forth.
That's what I hear.
Okay. I love Trading Places. Didn't quite crack my... Actually, didn't crack my top 10, but I might amend that.
I would like to see where the rest of your top 10 is then, but...
Okay, we can talk about also-rans, I guess. I mean, fuck it. But number four is Batman Returns. Because that movie takes place almost entirely on Christmas, by the way. It's an awesome movie. It's probably my favorite Batman movie.
It's the best Batman movie.
Yeah, I think it really is. Like, the first Batman is aged really bad.
Yeah, Charles disagrees.
I mean, I don't want to play my hands immediately, but you really have to have a lot of affection for Danny DeVito's ability to be otherworldly.
Yeah.
And if you get a lot of pleasure out of that, then I can see how it can top every other Batman
that's ever
made.
I do.
Yeah, I thought he was great in that. I love Danny DeVito.
That part
movie.
Of my brain just didn't quite develop, but I appreciate that it did. In yours, I consider it a show of evolutionary superiority.
He's a great actor when he wants to be. You
yeah,
know,
he is.
He's and
really
his.
Is, I mean, the makeup, the whole suit.
Yeah,
the
Stan Winston makeup is so gross. He's so gross, but it works. It really works to me, anyway. You know, and I thought it was well written too. It was like really well written by the guy that wrote Heathers. I'm looking at. up his deets right now.
It's they would never
Daniel Waters.
They would never make a movie like that now, because I think, frankly, people are a little bit too soft on what they need comic books to be, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And plus, they would want to build it into another. I mean, it just, it's so creepy and weird,
yeah.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
And the Christmas, I mean, to me, it kind of works like Scrooge in that way, where it's sort of a horrific Christmas.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
I mean, they have this whole, like, Ten Commandments setup, too, where the penguin wants to kill the firstborn children of the rich parents of Gotham.
Yeah.
Which is, like, deeply creepy. And then he has these penguins with fucking rocket launchers on them, you know? And he's got that creepy duck-like boat in the sewer. Max Schreck, Christopher Walken, murdered his partner. And then Danny DeVito, like, gets his body parts in the sewer and uses that to blackmail him. And he bites off his image consultant's nose.
Another movie that just dumps on the rich.
Yeah,
that's a big that might be the one thing that connects all these Christmas movies.
Are there any biblical references when he's talking about killing the firstborn? That's like a very plagues in Egypt sort of thing.
It totally is.
You have to paint lamb's blood on the doorway so that your firstborn will not be murdered.
Yeah, I think the one difference is that it's not firstborn sons, which it was in Ten Commandments, right?
I think so. Yeah.
In this one, he's just like, "Hell, the sexes are equal. May the erogenous zones burn sky high."
I think you can get a bumper sticker that says that still from the movie.
I'm sure you can. I'm sure Warner Brothers is selling that. Anyway,
Michelle Pfeiffer is super hot.
Michelle Pfeiffer is so hot.
And she's,
that scene.
No one is hotter to me in any movie than Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns.
Even Fabulous Baker Boys Michelle Pfeiffer is like a small tier below like fucking fucked up Batman Returns Michelle Pfeiffer. Like, she's so hot and she's so damaged and...
reignited
my interest in this film.
She kills.
Oh yeah,
She kills Zorin by kissing him with a taser.
Yeah,
and like killing
you
herself
mean
too.
Shrek.
Yeah,
Max Shrek.
Oh wait, did I see Max Zorin?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Christopher Walken.
Different Max that he plays.
And I very vividly was like, that's cool. I would go that way.
Oh hell yeah!
I would do what he did. I would kiss her and die.
At 6 years old?
Yeah.
I had very weird feelings about it in that movie when I was a kid.
She's the goods.
Well, I was going to say, and I thought this was too revealing, but now that Greg's out on the record, I was going to say this, speaking of your Jamie Lee Curtis moment, I think this might have been one of the first movies where I was like, hold on a second, I feel very differently about this woman than I do the girls on the playground. whose hair I want to pull out.
Yeah, what's the distinction here?
Filmcore podcasts are a good place to like just air out any sort of psychological
shit. Some weird psychological shit, and it's on the internet.
I do that on a regular, so.
By the same token.
You gotta get out somehow.
Yeah, exactly.
Uma Thurman and Batman and Robin actually like did a little bit of that for me, where I was just like, man, like this movie's horrible, but God, she's attractive in this movie. Like,
well, yeah, but by that time, and I might have my history rearranged, but by that time, I feel like I was scoping out babes all the time.
This is 1997, so
yeah,
I was
1997?
It's the same character.
A little
though.
Younger.
It's the same
you're
exact
a lot
character.
Younger.
I turned, no, sorry, no, I lied. I was nine.
Okay.
Math fail.
Still.
I was emotionally nine.
There you go.
I think I was 12 or 13.
And you are emotionally nine?
No.
I'm like emotionally 11.
You got this.
Yeah.
That's not very many years of difference when they're that early.
Yeah.
That much development makes a big difference.
Right.
Anyway, Charles, you want to hop in do you have a top five?
What top fives are we breaking down right now? We've been all over the map so far.
Yeah, we really have. But this is top five Christmas movies.
Yes.
Christmas movies.
And the criteria is, for those joining us late in the live stream.
You never know.
That one criterion is, that Alex laid out, is that the movie takes place during Christmas.
Okay.
The majority of the plot.
I can't imagine. I'd be surprised if you hadn't already brought up Die Hard.
We have not brought that up yet.
Well, then
it might come up later.
It might come up later.
I don't know. We have no program notes for this. We're going off the cusp here.
Okay.
I have some notes.
Well,
so do you.
Off the cuff.
I mean, if there's anybody who can, I didn't think until I watched that movie that somebody could make taking out a bunch of brutally murderous, are they, I don't even know what they are. Are they Scandinavian?
German.
They're German.
Yeah,
it was still okay to...
One by one. It's like, he does it with almost cartoon, with like cartoony pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
He steps outside of morality and charmingly murders these guys who are murderers. There's a scene where he puts them down in the elevator altogether, ridden with bullet holes.
Yeah.
And so the bad guys open up the elevator door, and then there's like a Merry Christmas sign, I think, like scrawled in lipstick. Like something that, if the soundtrack hadn't been whoa, hilarious, could have been really dark.
Yeah.
But they just go for laughs, and I bought it.
It's Carl. Carl has a gray sweater on that says, now I have a machine gun, ho ho ho, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Carl is... Oh, no, sorry, it's Carl's brother, whose name escapes me. Carl's the main number two.
It's Lars or something like
it's
that.
It's not on Fuck, what is it?
I've never seen you not be able to recall something instantly. Are you having trouble with your mainframe?
Let me just reboot for a second here.
Yeah.
And
you just don't try so hard and it'll come to you immediately.
Wait, hold on. But let's just let's keep it controlled here. What, that would be like your number five, or that would be...
That'd be my number five, yeah.
And your number
because
four?
Because I feel like it's an action movie, but I'm always delighted when I remember that it is
also
a movie that takes place at Christmas.
Yeah.
I didn't see Die Hard until I was... Again, this is another one where I was like, I might have been 22 or something.
Really?
I know, it's shameful.
I know.
But I was delighted before I even knew that I was going to like the movie when I found out it took place over Christmas.
Okay.
And it adds something to it. It's the company Christmas party, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they play some Christmas music.
And again, it's he's like the legit guy who's a cop. Who's a poor dude. And his wife is working for some big...
Yep.
Wealthy company that
the Nakatomi Corporation.
Yeah, that is corrupting everything.
They're not seeing eye to eye.
It's they're
kind of on the rocks a little
bit. But they will. You're right. I mean, the Christmas element of it is what lets you know that they're gonna figure it out.
It's gonna be okay.
Yeah. Okay.
You're right. The blue collar guy saves the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Charles,
number four.
Yeah.
What's your number four? You got to catch up to us here.
I think. Are we on number four? Or
yes.
Are we all the way up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think number four is gonna be. Well, you stole Scrooge from me, right? Because we already discussed that.
We did, but I mean, they haven't seen, or Alex saw it. It's not
just
as nice as
number
list.
Four.
Yeah.
Cool.
Scrooge is
Chris
hasn't
seen
great.
It. Oh, he has seen it. He's
no,
seen
I did, but
later.
I didn't see it until recently.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah. Why
I should have seen it earlier.
What do you like about it? What's your? Because I love it. That's my.
I like, more than anything else, I like Bill Murray doubling down on his sort of mid-era persona as the cranky, aging guy who doesn't give a shit about anything. And it's a beautiful overlap between his early sort of Devil May Cry, ladies man, who's balding but nobody cares, and then late Bill Murray, who hits us all right in our heartstrings because he is... sad because he is coming to grips with reality, but he is still finding the charm in it.
Yeah.
And so I think Scrooge is like the perfect overlap of both of those things. He's cantankerous, but he's like not willing to give up the fight yet. He's not willing to wave the white flag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just like maybe screwing around with some sorority girls. But if you walk out of his way, if the situation presents itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fair.
Which has nothing to do with the movie. It's all about Bill, really, for me.
Totally.
Yeah, he sells it. He really makes it what it is. Number three, Chris?
My number three, what did I end up with? Oh, this is really boring, but I had to put it right,
next to
put it right in the middle. I love Elf.
It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Greg is shaking, for the
mm-hmm.
for our listeners live streaming,
yeah.
Greg is shaking his head and deleting my phone number from his phone book.
Just unfriending on Facebook.
I can remember in high school when it came out, like I didn't even want to count it as a Christmas movie, but now it totally is, and I watched it over Thanksgiving with my family. I loved it. Will Ferrell, you know, in the years after 9/11, made a hilarious character about Elf that should otherwise be really creepy. This is not our introduction to Peter Dinklage. I'm sure he was in something important before that.
The Station Agent.
Certainly the first movie I can remember with Peter Dinklage.
And a lot of us, I think.
Super funny, and it stands the test of time. It gets funnier over time, which I didn't even like Will Ferrell on SNL, like, when I was seeing him as a kid. But, like, old school, I saw it the first time, I was like, I guess that's cool, and then third and fourth viewing, it becomes instantly more funny. And same thing with Anchorman, and I think this movie works the same way. It just gets better over time. So I had to keep it on my list.
See, I still think Will Ferrell works best as a supporting character. An old school to me was kind of like him and his, like, he's a six-man kind of guy. Shouldn't be the star, I don't think. I think when you get too much of him, he bogs down the premise in his own sort of infantile man-child thing. And Elf was like one of the first movies where I was like, ah, yeah, I'm out on this guy.
Really?
Yeah, because of that.
We short, not long rabbit hole. Did you see Stranger Than Fiction?
I did.
What did you think?
I liked it a lot, but he's, you know, he's
co-starring with some.
He's sort of saved. Excellent. Yeah, he's sort of saved by the premise and the fact that there are these, like, Emma Thompson is actually leading his character through the whole story.
Right.
So, I didn't see the one where he's like he's lost his house and he has to sell all his shit. It was a little indie.
Everything Must Go.
Everything Must Go.
With Biggie's son as the kid.
Was that good? I remember making a note to see that.
It was a little bit of like a.
I saw it on TV.
Sundance glow to it, you know, but
it was cute. What I remember.
Yeah.
I might have seen the whole thing. I don't know. I think that Will Ferrell has three great movies. I think Elf is one of them. Over time, I've gotten to appreciate it, but at first, I was kind of not crazy about it. And then I think Anchorman's great, and I think Step Brothers is great. But
I gotta see,
you know, they're all
one.
Pretty dumb.
Because I'm pessimistic on Will Ferrell at face value, but like his movies have some way found their way to me through friends.
Yeah.
And I learned to like them. But yeah, Step Brothers, I was like, that looks dumb. Oh,
it's very dumb, but it's pretty awesome. Some movies of his, it really doesn't work. The shtick is, like Greg says, like, he just wears out his welcome. Like, Talladega Nights is awful, you know?
Oh, I liked that one the first time I saw it.
Really?
I thought it was so funny. Yeah, The Prayer, exactly. Yes!
The Prayer is funny, but that's not, you know, the rest of the movie is still there. I don't know.
You're right. You're not wrong.
But I guess he's pretty good in Wedding Crashers, right? And that's a supporting role. So that's, I can see that to your point, Greg. Anyway, though, yeah, I think Elf is a good choice. And I like that they have stop motion in there. I like that they have Bob Newhart in there randomly as like his dad.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Or is Elf dad, right? And James Caan's his actual dad. And Mary Steenburgen, one of the hottest older ladies working right today, is his stepmom.
I can't disagree with you. I never would have said that, but
and she's his mom and stepbrothers, by the way.
She is. She is. She's smoking in that.
Smoking.
She plays
what's her name?
Mary Steenburgen.
If you've ever seen What's Eating Gilbert Grape, she plays the slutty slutty neighbor that Johnny Depp just bangs every time he brings his like groceries. he gets her groceries and then he just bangs her like in the kitchen and
what a dream.
She is so just like white trash hot. It's unreal.
Yeah, she really like uses her southernness in that movie to good effect.
Yeah.
I love her.
Real sexy lady.
Okay, so
big two fans here on the side of the table of Mary Steenburgen.
Yeah, Ted Danson, like touche Ted Danson.
Yeah.
Touche. Greg, do you have what's your number three?
I mean, my number three was would have been Batman Returns, because I had that in Trading Places basically sort of interchange.
That could be number three.
And the way I really gauge it is just sort of for this particular list score, I think I'm going on rewatchability. And what I'm just always down to, like if I'm stuck with my parents, as I currently am, for about a week's time, what comes on TV and what am I just totally cool to zone out watching? While people are yelling behind me somewhere in the house. And could be Trading Places or Batman Returns. Like
I'd give you a rewatch.
Those two movies can trade places on your list anytime.
That's nah.
sorry.
Yeah, very good movie. I'm not disagreeing with that. I guess for the purposes of this list, it didn't occur to me as a Christmas movie.
Batman
Returns.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Trading Places is in the. It's very near and dear to the Wickman family.
Yeah. Well, it's almost, I mean, it's a general like holiday movie, right? Because it's a big New Year's thing at the end with the Jim Belushi and the gorilla suit and like.
Right.
I actually watched that as maybe a 14-year-old with my dad.
Really.
And it was on TV. It was on TNT or something. And I will never forget, like maybe 2/3 of the way through the movie, during a commercial break, and there was Ovaltine's ad on the TV or whatever, and Dad looks at me and goes, "Do you know what a prostitute is?"
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Greg was saying, it's the first time we saw boobies on TV.
Yeah.
And I did, and then I went, "Yep."
Yeah.
Yep, avoiding this conversation, bypassing that talk.
And later on in the night, you're furiously looking up prostitute.
Yeah. What was he looking on? 14.
Yahoo, probably, right? Or AOL. Yeah,
that's Jeeves.
I had to get through the beep, 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 doo, doo. In order to get
to
the web, then.
Yeah, half an hour just sitting there reading a book.
What's your number three?
My number three, I've been sort of vacillating between a couple. I'm going to just go with It's Wonderful Life because, you know, you can't go wrong with It's Wonderful Life. Every Christmas, it's on NBC now. But it used to be, before the rights somehow got acquired by NBC Universal, it was on every channel like all the time because...
Clarence.
Yeah.
Clarence.
Yeah, like, it's like a great... It's probably one of my favorite non-Hitchcock Jimmy Stewart movies.
Yeah,
it's gotta be up there at least. That and Harvey. It is my favorite.
It's like that. Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, Harvey.
Yeah.
Do you guys like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Yeah, that's a really good Capra movie, too.
That meant a lot to me in high school. And then.
Were you in student government?
No. I just meant, like, you know, I had a teacher who made us write an essay about. That was an option to write a paper about it. I wrote a paper about it. I was like, fuck, I really like this movie. That's going back to it. I think my politics have changed a little bit since high school. So it's kind of like, it's a little bit different to think about it that way. But I'm glad you guys being some of the hardest critics I know.
Yeah. No, it's not.
It's encouraging to me that you guys actually like that movie. And Jimmy Stewart, who is...
He's an American treasure, man.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna give away my number two because it's a wonderful life. I wanted to leave it out entirely because
me too. That's weird.
Because I really wanted to make this like a personal, just like
cool,
goofy like movies that I really want to watch around Christmas time. That's not a movie I seek out, but it's something my aunt always wanted to watch on Christmas Eve. And it's once you sit down and commit to it, it's always rewarding. You always appreciate watching it, and you can't deny it as like an extremely important part of the genre.
Yeah,
you know what kills me about it? I think I have like this negative perception of it because when it's played on TV, it's not played well.
That's a good point.
They cut it up weirdly.
They the audio is always, it's got that old, you know, old film popping to it.
Yeah.
The audio.
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably just deserves a better edition to be played. Maybe it is now. I know the last time I saw it was a few years back. But it was to the point that I was like, I can't sit here and just like squint and you know, listen to this poorly played movie now. And I think that's why I left it off, actually. That was not for lack, you know, not for its lacking.
I'm quite fond of it. And there are two... it was the movie we watched every year, actually. And I think the only one, actually.
Because I think they do... They make all these other movies, they'll play them coming up to Christmas, but... One of the networks makes a point of playing it on Christmas Eve.
And if they didn't,
NBC.
We had it on VHS Super Long Play.
Yeah.
Tremendous quality.
Yeah.
As a backup.
Yeah.
Right.
And the scene when They're, I can't remember what the situation is exactly, but they're speaking on the telephone together, really close to each other. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Before they're an item.
She's calling her boyfriend in New York.
Yeah, and it's the sexual energy is just way off the charts from what you thought Jimmy Stewart was capable of delivering.
Yeah, him and Donna Reed, yeah.
And then,
Donna Reed smoking in that movie, by the way.
I mean, spoiler alert, if there's anybody...
A couple of Donna Reed fans on this side of the table.
On the live stream who hasn't seen it yet, look, duck and cover, but then... Maybe halfway through the alternate timeline that he's experiencing, he has this moment where he just sort of looks out over the city and his eyes are just totally glazed. And it is just clear that we are not looking at a well man. Like, he just cannot comprehend what's going on before he starts to make peace with it. But
it's really ahead of its time. I mean, just dealing with suicide and the whole premise of it is I think... Like, really difficult, you know? Like, you don't get Christmas movies like that now, right? You wouldn't get something that's...
I don't think you do.
Yeah. Well, it was quite dark, and it wasn't received well when it came out, but because...
Really?
The rights... Yeah, because the rights sort of fell into public domain, it got showed every Christmas, right? All the time. And so, eventually, around, I think, by... It started in the 70s when they started doing this a lot, but I think by the early 80s, it was, like, a staple of Christmas, and it got re...
You got to
appreciate
it,
yeah. And it's a really good movie. I have it on Blu-ray, and I got one for my family on Blu-ray, so that we never have to watch a shitty like TV quality version of it ever again. But yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it this year.
25 minutes for us to say something that people might actually listen to this podcast for. The 1980s factoid was really interesting to me.
I don't know if anyone.
Oh, they want more trivia? I can give you guys trivia.
Yes, Alex.
There might be some Mary Steen version fans out there.
Well,
who just wanted
to
know a little bit
right.
more about her.
So we've got two lights of
two big
points in the dark.
So what are we at? Two now?
We're at. That's my number three, so we need Charles' number three.
Final three, I'll carry the baton of older Christmas movies and say Miracle on 34th Street.
Yeah. Very
good.
Oh, the original.
The original.
Good.
Yep. There's just nothing like a family Christmas movie that begins with a drunk Santa.
Yeah. That one is my... God, what were we just talking about?
It's a Wonderful Life?
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life. I mean,
that's
like the one that we went to.
Yep. And I think... And they're very... Yeah. I think...
Pretty similar.
They go hand in hand.
There are things about them that are very illustrative of each other. And watching the adults deal with what they know can't be the case, and the kids know what's up. The kids and Chris know what's actually up. It's a really interesting way to tell the story.
Do you guys know that Natalie Wood is the kid in that movie?
Yeah, she is. Uh-huh.
Isn't that crazy? And Maureen O'Hara is in that too.
Yeah.
Reno Hare was the mom and the parent.
The guy...
thank you.
The guy, was he a journalist or... He's kind of a nobody.
Oh, the...
It was
the,
like his one really big role.
Her boyfriend?
Like the guy, like he clearly should have been played by Cary Grant. Or someone of that, that level, you know?
Grant.
No, it's not. It's not. It's just this... Sort of like your average 1940s is white guy. You know, white, like New York actor.
We were born too late, Chris.
Yeah.
John Payne, right?
John
one?
Payne,
right.
Yeah.
John Payne.
Nailed it so good.
Okay, so also I should say most of these movies that are older that we're talking about are all like playing theaters right now, which is pretty cool. So Home Alone is playing in theaters. Miracle on 34th Street, the 47 version that we're talking about, is playing in theaters. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And It's Wonderful Life is playing the Music Box.
That's three things now we've actually talked about that people might might be glad they listened to this podcast for.
So look up your local listings, ladies and gentlemen.
So that's your number. That's your number three.
It's number three, and we know your number two.
Your number
is Wonderful Life.
It's Wonderful Life.
So now, Greg, you're
my
your number
ear.
That was that was a rough one. That's a real injustice in that film.
God, I think I would say Miracle on 34th Street, but I left it off because of my last two, which are I'm going to say Christmas Story. No, that's one. I wanted to take it off just because it's played on TBS 24 hours a day.
That's right. Or,
which drives me crazy that they do that. Because I grew up with it being this really hard movie to find. And my family had a VHS that we would just, you know, I could always watch it. And it was one that I remember very distinctly laughing with my parents about. Like, the jokes were funny to both of us. Which was kind of a new thing to experience as a kid.
This is the Christmas story.
Yeah.
The leg lamp.
The Peter Billings lamp.
Yeah.
You know?
Glad you brought it up because I didn't want to write it down. Probably because I'm sick of seeing it.
Yeah, totally. No, totally.
Yes, it's totally.
I don't want to give PBS the satisfaction.
It's in my family. Like, that was another one where Papa Wick sat us down and was like, "You watch this movie."
Yeah.
So this is a classic. So that's been a big part of our Christmases. It's just like, I don't know. The other ones haven't really burnt out, but this one, I've seen it enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a
and I'm not judging.
Channel, yeah.
I'm saying it belongs at the top of
mm-hmm.
the list,
mm-hmm.
but I didn't put it on.
No, it's been, I mean, I've avoided watching it the last few years, I think, just because of that, just because it's overplayed, and I almost don't want to ruin the image that I have of it.
Yeah.
You know?
I should say, the director, Bob Clark, of that movie also, he produced Black Christmas, which is a very different kind of Christmas movie. It's a sorority slasher movie from 1974.
Carrie Fisher's in that.
Really?
Isn't she?
I do not remember that.
Okay.
He also directed and co-wrote Porky's. And Porky's 2 the next day.
That doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah.
And then I guess he produced Rhinestone. So he's over the place. Yeah. And he
but
directed and co-wrote Baby Geniuses.
But it's based, it's not the direction I think
coming for this guy
that matters. It's based on a book or on a short story.
A book, I believe.
Is it a full book?
In God We Trust, All Others Pay Cash by Gene Shepherd.
Gene Shepherd, that's right.
Yeah, it's a book.
Mm-hmm. And then there was a sequel to this with one of the Culkin brothers in it, either Kieran or who's he? Rory? Rory Culkin?
There's a Rory.
Charles Grodin, I think, is it that? But it's garbage.
Beethoven?
Yeah, of Beethoven thing. Yeah.
Let's look this up. Yeah, I want to see the sequel. In the meantime, though.
It's a Thanksgiving movie. I mean.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it a Thanksgiving story or something?
No, it's not called that. But I think it might be called Christmas Story 2.
Oh, Thanksgiving.
Like, back to Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Revenge of Thanksgiving.
It looks like it says A Christmas Story to Ralphie's House. And there's also It Runs in the Family, which is a spinoff of the same material, the same source material, that book.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Maybe that's what you're thinking
mm-hmm.
of?
Yeah.
That's 94, so I'm sure there's a Culkin
in
it.
It's about the same family, right?
Yes, let's find out. Yes, that's Kieran and Charles Grodin. And, mm-hmm. and Mary Steenburgen.
Mary Steenburgen.
Nice!
She keeps coming back.
Yep, not even...
She is Doc's love interest in Back to the Future 3.
She sure is.
Yeah.
Clara Brown. Clara Clayton,
mm-hmm.
who becomes Clara Brown, of course.
Of course.
Well, she... Never mind. Okay.
Alex, what's your number
Christmas
two?
Story. My number two is Die Hard. We've talked about this, but I don't think it cracked anybody's list yet except for yours.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
But, so we really did touch on
it. It's on my top 10. It was in consideration.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
For sure.
I mean, that's probably, that and my number one of the movies that I watch the most that are Christmas movies. I don't really relegate them to Christmas because they're amazing any time of year.
Wait, relegate them?
Yeah.
That has a negative connotation.
Yes, but well,
I
don't.
He doesn't.
I don't put them in a box. I don't just say, "Oh, this is a Christmas time movie." Although I really don't do that with a lot of these other ones too, but these ones especially last all year and they're amazing.
So when a VIP is coming over to your apartment and it's July
mm-hmm.
and you need to pick a DVD to watch, you're like,
"You're still
these
open to
are
Batman
acceptable
and Die Hard.
Yeah.
to watch now."
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough.
A lot of times I'll put on Sudden Death with Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I thought Top Gun was like the go-to for everyone. You have a chick over, put on the Top Gun. It seals the deal every time.
Independence Day.
Really?
Seven. That's the hookup. I don't know why.
Ladies love Seven.
I don't know why. I think it's something just
you
about
know
how.
Why?
I think it's something about just how like carnal it is.
Visceral.
I mean, yeah. But chicks just dig it.
You're fucking with us.
No, I'm not. Seven.
True story.
A friend of mine
I
turned
know
me onto that. He was like, "Yo," he was like, "Dude, play Seven." He's like, "Borrow my DVD of Seven, man."
So then maybe this has more to do with me than the movie, but true story, freshman year of college, this girl wanted to hang out in her dorm and watch a movie, and I was like, "Oh, I gotta pick a movie. Oh, I don't know what to do."
Angels
and I just knew, like, there was, like, I just, like, went to my list of movies I hadn't seen yet, and I really wanted to watch Requiem for a Dream.
Oh my god!
Is she into drugs? Or?
Oh my god! It was no, we weren't doing drugs, but it was like we still hooked up afterwards. But it was kind of just like wow, that
well,
kind of like just had to turn off the movie and be like,
let's get to it.
That was rough. Let's on to what we're both here for.
I mean, ass to ass.
The whole thing is.
What's the,
I don't think I've seen the movie since.
Yeah, that's right.
I've seen.
Ass
to ass. I think it's the last one. Anyway, that's a bit of a sidetrack.
That's
the
sidetrack that I signed up for.
Yeah.
Actually, James Bond, because of our James Bond podcast, I was in a James Bond kind of mood last time. So that's what I did. And I'm still going out with him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was your hookup movie, huh?
That's right.
That's what we really need is a podcast on hookup movies.
That's not a bad idea either, although we've already got
I won't be able to contribute much
this'll
to
be,
that.
Well, this will be just a little piece of
it
before.
I mean, we can all, the best ones that we all submit will be the ones that didn't work. I mean,
I've got some good ones for that,
one not to watch.
Yeah. Oh, I thought, honey, I showed the kids would be perfect.
Fast Food Nation did not work.
Surprise.
Yeah, I think I could actually pull it up now, but at the time I wasn't good enough yet.
I understand.
To make it, to like bridge the fact that like that movie was just an inappropriate movie for a go. Wait, fuck, what were we on? Okay,
number two. I think we're on
Die Hard,
right. Number two, yeah.
Number two, of Christmas for me, if it's successful, is a time of being a kid. Number two is Muppet Christmas Carol.
Very good movie.
I'm so glad you, because I couldn't put it on my list. But
I'm so
glad,
angry
yeah.
that you stole my number one.
Oh,
really?
That's awesome!
Yes.
Bro, it's shade!
Yeah.
Well, then you know what? The gift
I'm
that I'm
really
going to give you is I'm just going to say a little thing about it, and then we're going to wait
right.
so that you can give the main deal.
Okay.
All right,
thanks.
So, all that I'll say is Michael Caine, obviously, what a revelation. And I love that as fun and as goofy and as many Muppets as you couldn't wait to see in the movie are there. The Ghost of Christmas Future is fucking scary.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, nobody is better at making you laugh and making you get the heebie-jeebies than than those
Brian
those
Henson.
Folks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, we're gonna table it.
Yeah.
For
okay.
you to
I got a lot to say. A lot to
shortly.
Say about
I have,
oh.
I can't wait.
Well,
well we can,
as Michael Caine guy,
you'll be glad
sense.
To know that we're gonna skip right to you, because
that's your number one?
We're on two.
We're,
one.
You're
yeah.
number one, yeah.
You're the first
I gave away my
one.
Two. It's a Wonderful
one.
Life.
Yeah.
My one is Home Alone. We already talked about that.
We can still
yeah.
talk about
no,
it.
No,
right?
We didn't.
That's
yeah, we did not
one,
really get
so.
Into it. Is it? Okay.
It's your number one as well.
It is. Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I had it really low.
You did. You did have it very low.
And I watched it a lot too. I have to reassess this. Anyway,
it might be that it's the movie I saw the most recently,
yeah.
but it
right
just,
I'm going
to
take a long walk.
I love that movie.
It's so
and
much
it,
fun.
What that
an
was,
adventure.
That was, until Titanic came along, wasn't that the most, like, the highest box office gross? Is that crazy that I said that?
It was E.T., but it was in the top 10. It made $285 million.
Maybe it's like
it made crazy
weekend?
Bank for a,
box,
for a family movie.
Movie
about
you know what else made crazy bank? That
fending off
yeah,
robbers.
It's
yeah.
so dumb.
Incompetent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had the poster
yeah, like
with his
like
map.
Mentally
in my
handicapped.
Room.
Yeah. I had the video game.
It's a great poster.
The Nintendo game.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's...
An Indian kid in my grade school used to, would call me Kevin McAllister, and I was very happy about that. Because
that's
I
awesome.
Thought,
oh,
hey,
yeah.
Man,
that's awesome.
What
so, like,
better, yeah.
And he just thought I looked like, and I was like, stop it. You're just saying that because
you're
white.
You looked a little, you looked a little MacGyver.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so,
yeah.
I could do anything
yeah.
with pliers and lint.
I loved it.
Yeah, I used to make that face all the time, and everyone would tell me that I looked like him, and I was also similarly very excited about that. Movie's fucking great.
I mean, okay, since we all know it's like pretty high up there, where does number two, the sequel, rank for you guys? On par? Below or above?
I gotta watch it again. And I actually thought about watching it recently because I'd already seen the original this year. And I wasn't going to watch that.
The sequel's called Lost in New York, in case you
forgot. Yeah, I know.
Home Alone
okay.
2, Lost in New York, 1992.
Were you waiting for me to say it?
No.
Well, just keep
no,
it technical,
no, no,
you know.
No, no, no.
Directed by Christopher
he's
Columbus
just,
and also co-written and produced by John Hughes.
Psychological
yeah,
warfare on you right now.
Look
just for sport.
Look at our Twitter for a link to purchase
yeah.
it
yeah.
from New Line Cinema Home Video. or whatever the fuck it is.
Fox.
I mean, Fox. That's your guys' job. I told you I was unprepared for this, and I did not plan to be prepared.
You're right.
That's fine.
It's quite far below for me, but it has slowly come up a little bit because my affection for Tim Curry has increased as I've gotten older.
He's so good in that, right?
Yeah.
So good in that.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
He was
it's my number.
A creepy weirdo when I was a kid, but now I have more affection for his creepy weirdness.
Yeah. Speaking of Muppets,
like
though,
it's passable,
you know.
But it's not. Are you guys big fans of Home Alone 2?
Yeah.
I think it's like I think it's one of the closest sequel companion pieces to an original that actually is.
Okay,
it's
I
like
felt like
Home Alone 2
was,
and Wayne's World or
for
Godfather
me,
2, Godfather.
For me, it actually sticks out as in my memory. It's a
before
example
Sunrise,
of a disappointing sequel, but I will have to watch it again.
Yeah,
I wore the thing.
You guys like
I mean, it definitely is just a complete, like almost remake.
Right.
You know, they don't. I mean,
but in a hotel,
basically. Yeah, in like an old abandoned house.
Is
on
no,
that's
renovated
scary
house.
Part. That's
mm-hmm.
scary.
Renovated house. Yeah.
It was weird. It was a weird move in that one to have them like stick him up with a gun. Remember, he's got a gun in it, which I remember even as a kid being kind of put off by. Like, are we suggesting they're gonna shoot this child?
Right. That's a little weird.
Which has it's a lot of problems
to
it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because in the first one, you never really think that there's going to be any danger. I think the closest thing they do is they hook him
mm-hmm.
on a door.
I was going to say, that's pretty...
We had a conversation about this earlier. Actually.
That had violent implications the last time I saw Home Alone.
Oh,
like,
he's going to bite
his
fingers off
like,
or something?
Yeah. Like, it was going to... We were going. We were headed to Tarantino land.
Yeah.
And
then the old creepy guy saves the day.
Yeah.
Right.
But that is so... I mean, that's such a... That's such a bizarre move to bite someone's fingers off.
Mm-hmm.
It's so unrealistic
of
a thing for a...
It teaches kids
for
everything.
For a white bandit to want to do?
It teaches kids everything, at least I think, the way my mother views the world, which is, that's what you get if you talk to strangers.
Yeah.
This is the
they
kind of guy you get.
They will home, and they will bait all your
a guy
off.
With a blowtorch for a head and who likes to bite fingers off.
Yeah.
And drown you in motor oil? What's the line? Motor oil line.
Oh, I don't remember.
Highly, yeah.
So a trivia thing about that, ladies and gentlemen, in the commentary track, we find out that Joe Pesci accidentally bit him a little too hard, and he still has a scar on that finger.
Creepy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Well, Joe Pesci was a little jealous, because, you know, he's the number one. You know how in movies they call number one, they call the main actor number one.
Yeah.
So Paul Colgan was number one. Joe Pesci's an Academy Award winning actor. He had just filmed Goodfellas, but he hadn't won the Oscar for it yet, because it came out the same year.
You think
but
he bit him maliciously?
No, but maybe subconsciously there was a little bit of animosity.
Maliciously.
Yeah. Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Just throwing that out there.
No, that's how you get Academy Awards. You become the role.
That's you're not wrong.
It's method acting.
It's a bigger conversation to have about John Hughes, but he's kind of all over the place with every movie. And I still love his stuff, but he'll always do something really... like one really goofy, weird thing, like that's surreal. Like someone will just touch something electric and turn into a skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
In multiple movies, like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, it happens, and then in Home Alone, it does too. These kind of things are just completely jarring from the movie. But then there's also these moments that are supposed to be very intimate and family, and I don't know if he's a great filmmaker, but that is. That's another conversation to have. I'm just throwing
that
out.
That's
you
a whole,
are,
you
that's
are
a whole podcast
your,
on its own.
Yeah.
You are making
yeah,
sure that there's a follow-up.
Yeah.
He has his...
kind of a big 2016, guys.
For film court, yes.
He has. I got to go here in a second, which I'm...
Oh shit.
Which I'm very sad about, because I want to know the knowledge you're about to drop.
Oh, so should we... All right, sorry. Well, hold up. Let's wrap up Home Alone and then Muppets. I guess,
okay.
And then you're number one.
Yeah.
Which can I guess what it is? But okay,
I think you know what it is.
Yeah, okay.
But it's tattooed on my body.
Yeah.
But
give away.
It's the only one that I knew Alex would have on his list.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be there. So I think Home Alone's great, and I think John Hughes puts his stamp on everything. But that movie does have some Chris Columbus elements, who he directed it, and it has that signature sort of the familial part of it, I think, comes through, and his like ability to relate to kids, which John Hughes wasn't as good at as a director. I think Chris Columbus is better at that, and I think he juggles the tone between like a Looney Tunes cartoon and like a sentimental family comedy drama thing. He can balance that better. And
like, what a weird scene, for example, when John Candy tells the story about the kid who got locked in the funeral home.
Yeah.
Like, what a weird moment.
The movie that's my number one has something like that too. I think that they like to balance the macabre with the, or the sad with the happy for Christmas. I think Christmas is a bittersweet time of year, so it's good that they do that, I think.
Okay. All right. I'll buy that. So Muppets, Muppet Christmas Carol. It's my number one because I think it's a testament to what just like pure great storytelling can be. It is incredibly touching, like incredibly touching. You get, I forget the last time I saw it, but like a couple of years ago. And I'm still like kind of, not tearing up, but like I'm just like a little, you know, just like a little.
Vulnerable?
Yeah, just a little, you know, a little weak in the knees for Tiny Tim.
Mm.
He's like,
isn't that
I guess Robin? In the canon of Muppets, he's like Kermit's actual nephew or something.
And it's Robin,
But they gimped him up for this one, right? So like, yeah. I don't think he normally
have a way with words, Greg.
Yeah.
You had a lot of other word options at your disposal.
Yeah, it's Christmas period. And Michael Caine is, he sells it, man. He plays it so real throughout the whole thing that you don't even, it doesn't even really occur to you that this is a real man dealing with puppets for 2 hours, you know?
Yeah.
He just sells it. And that kind of, I mean, you don't see that kind of, you don't see that kind of, like, full
commitment.
What's the word? Commitment, yeah, to a children's film like that.
It's a really great movie. It's my mom's favorite, for sure. That's probably why I didn't even put it on my list, because I was worried it would be corny, so I'm so glad that it's your number one. It's so well done, it hits all of the holiday notes, like, and, I mean, we should also mention, like, that owes, you brought up storytelling, that owes a lot to, obviously, Charles Dickens.
Right, yeah.
And like I said, I'm not prepared for this podcast, but how much do you think It's a Wonderful Life owes to the Charles Dickens story? Not to divert too much from The Muppet Christmas Carol, because that really deserves its own 30 minutes.
Was it actually based on the alternate
story? I don't know. But I'm just, that's why I'm asking. Like, it has that alternate.
I never put that together. Yeah, until you said that just now.
It has an angel looking back at George Bailey's life,
right,
which is kind of like the three
ghosts that
visit him.
It's like they do it three times in Christmas Carol. They do it once in It's a Wonderful Life. Anyway, but
that's a good point.
You guys should keep talking about Muppet Christmas Carol because it's awesome. And the only thing it doesn't have is Muppets riding bicycles, which is my favorite thing about Muppets.
How do they even do that?
It's the weirdest thing.
How do they
see Kermit on the bike? You're like, okay.
They have to move the legs, right?
That has contributed to nightmares. Personally.
Those little linguini legs.
You're just like thinking, like, how did that even happen?
Yeah, well, no, it I think led to me anthropomorphizing my parents' dog as a kid into imagining a dachshund that would stand on its hind legs. Because I was like, if Kermit can ride a bike, Hannah would definitely stand up and try to murder me.
Hannah.
Anyway, that's a sidetrack again.
Damn, terrified by Hannah.
That's why
the
we
dachshund
signed up, though. So don't worry about it.
We want the sidetrack.
Apologies to our sponsor, SeatGeek.
Is SeatGeek, is that like a bicycle seat that doesn't hurt your nads? Or
it's like StubHub.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Every ESPN guy and Bill Simmons now, who's no longer ESPN, like has to be sponsored by SeatGeek.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Which,
and Subway.
So that's an intentional shot at ESPN that he's calling himself BSPN, right? The Bill Simmons Podcast Network?
I think so.
It has to be.
I think so, yeah.
That's
pretty good.
Now we've really gotten off topic.
Well, no, because he's the best podcaster ever, so.
Is he number one?
He's my favorite.
Okay.
If we were doing a podcast list score, which is not totally film court pertinent, but Okay, anyway, Muppet Christmas Carol, amazing film. Brian Henson, underrated Muppet film director. He did Muppet Treasure Island also with Tim Curry.
Mm.
Great movie. My mom's favorite Christmas movie is It's a Wonderful Life, incidentally. It's just tying that into mom's favorite Christmas movies. I think
Hat
those are all
moms.
My notes. Half tip to
moms.
Oh, the two critics that play his old partner.
Yeah.
That was really funny.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. It's funny and scary somehow. That creeped me out when I was a little kid, honestly. Like, those two partners.
Also, like, I'm just looking at the cast. I mean, there's no one else in this movie besides...
Human being?
I mean, there are other humans, but I just mean, like, the talent. Like, the actors.
Mm.
I mean, they're nobodies.
So, well, it's like how in Jaws 4,
really,
like, he sold Jaws
really
4.
Carries this thing, you know?
He was a really good actor. There's a reason he won an Oscar. Or two. Yeah, two. Cider House Rules and Hannah and Her Sisters.
Hannah and Her Sisters, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great actor. To Michael Caine. To Michael Caine.
Dude, here's one for Michael Caine for sure.
Merry Christmas, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine.
Michael Caine. That's really good, too. The Screen Junkies, Michael Caine. Remember? We watched that at your place? Sidetrack again. We'll watch it again real fast before you leave. It's really good.
What's it? Let's round it off with your number one.
All right. Well, we don't have Charles' number one, do we? No, wait.
We
do because we covered it. Right.
And I could talk about it all day, but we've covered most of it.
Right, okay. Cool. All right. Gremlins. I don't know why you guys didn't have Gremlins in your top five. Like, that's outrageous to me. Like, Gremlins is fucking amazing, you guys. Like, it's probably.
That's why I keep you around, Kirsch.
It's in my top three of all time. Because
you continue to blow my mind.
Gremlins is an amazing Christmas film.
I have no doubt that you're right.
Wait, have you never seen Gremlins?
So?
Oh, my God.
What?
Oh, my God.
What?
Really? Oh, CP. It's so good. Man. It's like, because it takes elements from It's a Wonderful Life. It actually has It's a Wonderful Life in it at one point. Billy's mom is watching it while she's cutting up onions. We're not sure if she's crying because of the movie or the onions. Great moment. And so it's got the small town vibe. It's like built in a Hollywood backlot. Like, the whole town, Kingston Falls, looks exactly like whatever the fuck the town is called in It's a Wonderful Life. I don't remember what it's called. But it's like the set looks exactly the same. But it has these little monsters written by Chris Columbus, director of Home Alone, by the way. He wrote that on spec as an NYU grad student. So,
wow.
And Steven Spielberg produced it, speaking of super famous auteur producers like John Hughes and Steven Spielberg. And
wait, was Dante not involved?
No, Joe Dante directed it.
Oh, he did.
I'm saying Steve Spielberg produced it. And he loved The Howling, and he wanted to make like a cheapy Christmas monster movie.
That's right.
So that's why he got Joe Dante, because The Howling was funny and scary, and he wanted to do that but toned down for families. And this movie, along with Temple of Doom, actually, they were so violent for PG movies that they single-handedly created the PG-13 rating, Gremlins and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, both in 84.
It's also like, if you've ever had...
Now all the knowledge.
If you've ever seen, like,
I could have done this the whole time. I don't know.
You've ever seen some story
beforehand
making fun of, like, an old Chinese shop, or like where someone goes in and they're buying something and the store owner's like, no, you can't buy that. Like, that's from Gremlins. I mean, that whole setup is Gremlins.
Okay. I think so.
It's been parodied and, tons of times, basically, since then.
It's got Key Luke, who was in the Charlie Chan movies, but he wasn't Charlie Chan. Charlie Chan was played by a white guy, but Key Luke was like his assistant in like the 30s and the 40s.
Yeah, that's right.
Key Luke was very old when they made the movie, but
you
wouldn't think it. Anyway, great movie. It's scary. It's funny. It's sad. There's that Phoebe Cates scene where she pointedly talks about how her dad dressed up as Santa Claus for Christmas. He got stuck in the chimney and died, and they discovered his body like a couple days after Christmas. It was like, because the smell bothered the dog or something.
The dog, yeah.
Yeah, and...
what?
And, he, like, broke his neck. He slipped and broke his neck in the chimney, and he was just stuck there. Like, his body was stuck there, like,
super
decomposing.
Dark.
Holy
super dark.
Yeah. And so... So it's got that bittersweet Christmas thing.
Wait.
It's rather bitter.
Now that we've gone through all these, I'm only now sort of realizing how integral darkness is to a good Christmas movie.
Except for Elf,
maybe. Maybe that's why I don't like it. Maybe that's why I don't like Elf. It's like too vanilla for me. You know, like I need someone dead in a chimney. You know,
Phoebe Cates is dead in a chimney.
You can't understand yet.
Yeah. I need to earn like the majesty of.
And there's a connection somewhere with the best children's stories. Mm-hmm. Because for whatever reason, it seems like the best kids' books, stories, fables, mm-hmm. always have an element that some of them are quite dark, some of them are just a little dark. There's
yeah.
just like an element of overcoming a senseless tragedy or
right.
something
yeah.
like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like Roald Dahl, yeah. Brothers Grimm, Edward Gorey, Dr. Seuss, all of it's a little off-kilter.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three I thought of offhand, or four. Yeah, I think that.
All
yeah.
right, thanks. You're showing off, but that's fine.
Yeah,
am I?
You just sort of off the top of my head.
You guys all know
yeah,
them
no,
too.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Don't. Hey,
who?
We're all
Doctor Who.
We're all educated
Roald
here.
Roald Dahl's a good one. Roald Dahl's a good one.
Yeah, he's pretty dark.
Yeah,
it's like pitch black. Apparently, he didn't really like kids, even though he wrote children's stories, and he had children. Didn't like them apparently.
Doesn't seem like he likes
yeah.
adults much either, though.
Yeah,
most of his stuff. I mean,
it's true. In the stories, doesn't like adults, and he likes the kids. Maybe he just doesn't
mm-hmm.
like people.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Charlie Brown, Charles M. Schulz, a lot of his stuff is good stuff from Peanuts, the comic strip. Very dark, very melancholy and sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's about loneliness. It's really good, the first two decades of Peanuts.
I think that...
2.5 decades.
That movie, if I remember it correctly, or short TV special, is pretty... It's sad.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's about him recognizing, like, his loneliness manifesting in this, like, sad tree... You know, that
yeah.
no one else wants.
Externalizing
right.
his depression.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely, when Charlie Brown grew up, he, I hope he sought therapy. If not, I'm worried.
We saw therapy as a young boy, too. Remember from Lucy, who gave him horrible
advice.
Oh,
that's true. Yeah.
But, yeah, there were four Peanuts features before this latest one, and two of them are really, really sad. Snoopy Come Home and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. Both pretty sad. I think Your Good Man Charlie Brown is the one about the little redheaded girl moving in. And they echo that in the new one. Anyway. Sad
on
stuff.
That bright note, we hope all
everyone.
Of our all
yeah.
of our listeners have a wonderful Christmas and New Year's and happy holidays. I listened to a podcast, I think it was on NPR recently. No, it was Slate, where they disputed and I think put to bed the quote-unquote common knowledge or wise tale that more suicides are committed around the holiday season. Don't worry, you're going to make it through the holiday season. You'll probably kill yourself after it's over.
We're here to help you. Just delay the inevitable.
Right, when the eggnog wears off.
Thanks for tuning in.
All right, goodbye, everybody. Filmcore.